And rolling your way shortly, very shortly, on the internet, it's possibly on an archive if you're listening in the future times, is the July 9th, 2020 version of Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides, the twice weekly, well, a lot of talk by me, some interviews with other people, and sort of a hodgepodge of other stuff too, which is what's going to happen today. A lot of stuff from past protests in the last few weeks. Not a lot of immediately frequent stuff in the last 2 or 3 days. My apologies for that, having some mislaid audio problems, but that should be resolved in a couple of days when I do the longer Sunday show. So if you come back on the 12th, I guess it is, let's see, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, yeah, you'll be able to hear what I have not been able to put on today, or some of it anyway. So here it is. Enjoy it. It's a lot of it's pretty local, and that to me is what's important.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
And that, in case you've forgotten, is the intro that I'm always used for this show, at least for the last couple years have. It's Sing Me a Song of with Social Significance, at least the first few bars. And it's sung by Rosemarie Jeune from the 1962 revival cast of Pins and Needles, which is a Broadway revue written originally in 1937. Written, sponsored, and performed, according to the liner notes, by the International Ladies Garment Workers Union, who held their union meetings at the Princess Theater in New York City. The cast members all had full-time factory jobs in the garment industry and thus could only rehearse during the night and on weekends. It used its voice to air strong pro-union opinions, incorporating current events from its time. Features lighthearted and clever use of satire and spoof to poke fun at such things as fascist dictators in Europe and snooty American bigots. The American theater historian and writer John Kenrick said of the show Pins and Needles, "It's the only hit ever produced by a labor union and the only time when a group of unknown non-professionals brought a successful musical to Broadway." And other songs from the musical Pins and Needles are online, available free at YouTube if you get there. So check it out at some point if you're interested. Pins and Needles. So let's begin to orient ourselves with some public comment made on the budget that happened at the special meeting that was held on Thursday, July 2nd. I guess that's about a week ago today. Now, at that meeting, as I mentioned before, I think on these broadcasts somewhere, that was what they called a special meeting, which meant they claimed they only needed to give the public a 24-hour notice of its agenda, which means people didn't have much time to orient themselves to what was going on. And they also claimed the right to eliminate oral communications, because in special meetings, typically, there's only one subject and very rarely two on the agenda, which then are the only things you can talk about. There's no idea that there are some other items not on the agenda that you can discuss, because it's not a regular session. It's being held for the special purpose of covering a very limited number of topics, and hence they feel justified in eliminating the so-called oral communication period, where you can talk, admittedly, for a tiny period of time, but for about whatever subjects are not on the agenda. So at this point, This particular city council meeting a week ago, the so-called special session of July 2nd, actually had many, many items on it, including a consent agenda, public hearings, reports from different groups, presentations. I mean, it was a regular council meeting disguised as a special council meeting and held on an unusual day, Thursday. Normally, council meetings are the second and fourth Tuesdays of the month. Now, they claimed they needed to act fast to pass the budget. But if that were really the case at a special session, that's the only thing they should have had on the agenda. Instead, they violated, I don't know if they violated the city charter, state law, city custom, or just the rights of the public generally to be advised of what's going on and have adequate time to be able to give some reasonable input. But they violated one or all of those things and by going ahead with a very crowded agenda. What interests me, though, and that's kind of the background, the reason I mention this, well, is to mention their ill doings, because they need to, you know, they're not going to change their ill doings, in my view. So it's the community that needs to shout loud enough, bang hard enough, speak with clear enough voice persistently enough and over a sufficient period of time, or at least maybe even abruptly at such a point of time that it prompts a real change, as happens in other cities and happened at other times in other countries, that actually will be remedied. But what did happen at this July 2nd council meeting was a great number of people spoke about the budget. Not as many as wanted to speak about, particularly about the police budget, specifically defunding the police, because they were not advised as to when this item would come up on the agenda. And so what they did instead was they brought pots and they started banging them in front of the city council chambers to indicate that they wanted to be heard, goddammit. And, you know, let's have a regular council meeting. Let's hold it in a place where people can actually attend physically, like the Civic Auditorium or outside the city council chambers or in some other public venue where people can safely distance and so forth, and yet be heard and hear the city council. But the city council, of course, would have none of that. Mayor Justin Cummings had no interest in that. It's been repeatedly brought to his attention, as it has been brought to the attention of prior mayors like David Terrazas, and after him, Martine Watkins. It really boils down to, and it's no surprise here, they have no interest in serving or hearing the public. Just a certain segment of the public that agrees with the views of the staff. Pretty much. That's my general understanding. They do what they can get away with based upon their own agenda. However, there were some very interesting things said at this public comment on the budget section. They could hardly pretend they wouldn't allow public comment on the budget section. And in fact, they did allow public comment on other agenda items, even though they, at Cynthia Matthews' insistence or instigation or interruption, did not allow a regular oral communications period generally on items not on their agenda. And it was an agenda. It wasn't a special session with just one or two items. It was a regular session with the title special session pasted over the actual description of what it was. So they could hold it on a Thursday and hold it with little notice. And I guess they needed to hold it before a certain date in order to get certain grants, in order to get to meet constitutional requirements. They had screwed up with that. They hadn't adequately provided time for it. And the comments that were made, though, at this public comment section of this city council session were almost all about the police department, how it needed to be defunded and fundamentally, if not destroyed, then changed. And you're going to hear some of that now, because I think this kind of relatively intelligent, reasonable, detailed critique is what needs to be combined with direct street action in particular protests against particular targets that may actually have particular results. That's what I say from the comfort of an indoors place, not in the downtown. But I would be happy to be present at those protests if and when they happen. At least some of them, if I can make it health permitting. So we begin about 10 minutes into the public comment on the budget section. Even though this involved all aspects of the budget, almost the only thing people talked about was the police, the need to immediately slash the police budget and reapportion the money to places where it needed to go instead of to bigger, brighter military equipment, more lethal weaponry, higher salaries or maintained salaries or maintained over-policing ability in the city where you get 4 to 6 cops coming to, you know, direct a homeless person to move along, things of this sort. Huge amount of the budget goes to these absurdities, which are actually a form of pandering to merchant and conservative resident prejudice, but not really even resolving the issues to the satisfaction of those people who called the police. Anyway, the first speaker is Scott Graham, who has appeared on my show, or spoken on my show. Scope It Out Scott, as I call him.
Hi, this is Scott Graham. I would like to see an across-the-board 10% cut in all of the departments, not including what they're already cutting from the concession by their employees to take a 10% cut. I would also like to see the department heads take a 20% cut in pay because they get paid so much. As far as the police go, to quote the chief, he has said that at various occasions that 80% of their calls are about homeless people and homeless situations. And at another time said, if there's somebody else out there willing to take this on, then come and take the funding. So that's what we should do. We should set up a different thing, a different agency, a different way of dealing with homelessness, whether it's social workers, whether it's you know, part of public works cleaning up areas and leaving trash containers so that areas don't get trashed out, whether it's mental health workers, a mental health team that could go for intervene in mental health crises. We got to set this stuff up so that we can then take that money that the chief has offered and do these other programs. We can't just take the money away from the police until we have something to replace it. And so that's what I'm asking you to do, is to look forward and try to find a way to set up these alternatives to policing and, you know, let the police deal with real crime instead of, you know, going around harassing the poorest members of our society, which is what they're doing right now. Thank you.
Hey, good evening. This is Reggie calling again. I just wanted to say, when I think about the budget, what I usually ask myself is, you know, what do people need from the city budget right now? What do maybe the most vulnerable people need, especially in a global pandemic and sort of an economic depression that's paired with it? And we certainly heard a lot about how this environment affects the profits of real estate, hotels, you know, the sale value of single-family homes. That was very front and center with graphs and everything. There was even a brief discussion of how to assist these particular problems and small business owners. But there wasn't a discussion of worker impact. There wasn't a graph of lost jobs, despite us approaching 30% unemployment. We didn't see any graphs of eviction notices. We didn't see a graph discussing access to food, water, medicine, or shelter, or even health care, given that we're in a pandemic. So I know that these are things that maybe the county cares about, but, you know, that's like the only department that's not on the city level. We have every other department of the county also reflected on the city, except for Health and Human Services. And I wonder why that is. And I honestly wonder if it's healthy or sustainable to have the city talk about its budget like it's some sort of investor board meeting and totally divorced from human value and human cost. And so I just want to end this by making a call to defund police and reinvest in communities like everyone else is saying. We have plenty of money in the police budget, and we didn't need to cut all these other departments by 10%. That was a decision you made, not democratically. We could have just cut police. As we all have said, police are wasteful. They are spent criminalizing poverty. We spend $30 million on police right now, and I think it's pretty clear that when we have, like, over 20 police officers just twiddling their thumbs outside during this city hall meeting to protect you all from a dangerous noise protest, that maybe you don't need that many police, right? Maybe, like, this amount of money isn't necessary to protect people in this city. So I'll just leave it at that.
Thank you.
And I have the sneaking suspicion that I've played a little of this before, although it may sound actually, it may actually be different than what I played before, but it's a reiteration, because people who have said these things, or other people who have said similar things, again, been very specific about their concerns, although I guess for my money, not specific enough, and I'll go into that, I hope, down the road. It's worth listening to again. It's worth listening to if you've heard it before, because a lot of what's being said is worth saying again until the authorities pay some attention to it. And it's worth saying loudly and in numbers and in places where they can't ignore it. And that may mean taking direct action that makes it impossible for them to ignore it. If they insist on doing that, then the community will do something to stop that from happening or to initiate action that makes sure that it is not ignored. What I mean by wanting more specific discussion is it's all very well to talk about criminalizing poverty and spending a lot of wasteful money on going after homeless people. What we need to talk about is how much money is spent each year on the particular kinds of offenses that this city council and its predecessors have actually created as crimes. Being in a park after dark, standing on a median with a sign. If you're homeless, it means maybe panhandling. If you're a protester, it means right with a sign that says defund the police. Sleeping after 11 o'clock at night, the camping ban, which has been replaced now, although they have the law is still on the books, with, oh, blocking the sidewalk or obstructing an officer is often used if you don't obey an officer's order, or being in a park after dark, or public nuisance, or unlawful lodging. These are codes either the state or the city has, and that the city police have been using essentially to frighten homeless people and poor people into picking up what little they have, or what they can carry, what little they have, and moving somewhere else at the behest of those who are very comfortably situated in their own homes and businesses with piles and piles of possessions that they would never in a blue moon have to move along with, but they can sit there and direct other people who actually carry their livelihood with them on their back to move along. Here's some more from the city council meeting of July 2nd. All this testimony was ignored, and none of it was on the agenda for any kind of discussion except the police budget generally, which allowed them to talk about it and, of course, be ignored, as they did.
Max, I was born and raised in Santa Cruz, but I'm not proud of my hometown. When people ask me why, I often say that we're a community suffering from deep delusion. We have an unearned reputation, from my perspective, as a progressive city, when in fact we're much more alike the rest of the country than we are unique when it comes to racist policing and an education system that disproportionately funnels black and brown students through special ed and scared straight programs that end them up in college, or rather in prison instead of college. If you all commit to work with the community to negotiate defunding the expensive and ineffective police force and reinvest in institutions like practically everybody before me has called for, institutions that are cost-effective ways to keep our community safe instead of protecting the value of real estate, there are budget cutbacks that have to be made across the board, but this is an opportunity to reprioritize our budget toward a community refund to bolster institutions such as affordable housing, services for houseless people, and quality public education. Doing this would be a meaningful step toward making Santa Cruz worthy of that reputation that it has. I think we all want this town to be a model of progressive community of the rest of the state, and even the nation imagines it to be when they see images of our mayor kneeling with the police chief. So, you know, actions speak louder than words, and we've all seen today use the police to silence calls from the community to defund the police. So just know that you're sending a clear message and we hear you, but it's never too late to change course.
And, of course, again, affordable housing, college instead of prison. All noble sentiments and relevant sentiments, but it would be much more relevant if you talked about the University of California and the kind of sweetheart deals it's getting with the city of Santa Cruz, or how the city of Santa Cruz is colluding with the deputies in terms of assisting in the jail population continuations and the criminalization of people in the jail, and how many people are criminalized in there for what, and how the drug war is continuing, and how much money is going into the police department, essentially on the drug war, you know, by different agencies that help funnel money into the police. I've requested that information from Chief Mills and gotten really unsatisfactory answers. But we need, we need to do research about how much, quote, affordable housing is actually available in Santa Cruz, and for how many people, and what does affordable mean, and who are the real estate interests that are blocking this by name, and where they are located, and where their headquarters are, and who their bosses are. These are the issues, when brought to the fore, provide a tangible and appropriate target for legitimate, angry protest and real change.
Hello. My name is Adam Novak, and this is the third time I've called in to a council meeting to ask you all to defund the police. This message has been echoed by many other callers. Some people have been in opposition. But it really does seem to be the top issue among the citizens of Santa Cruz at the moment, is police funding. Can we cut it? Should we cut it? How much can we cut it? What should we do with it? Last time, a bunch of people called in about this. All the acknowledgement we got, as far as I could tell, was when Mayor Cummings said that on Thursday there'd be a meeting to talk about the budget. Today's Thursday. This is the meeting. I haven't really heard any discussion about adjusting the police budget. In fact, I've looked at the budget. It appears to add $1 million of police funding from the general fund. I'm beginning to think that you aren't actually paying attention. You really must reject or amend this budget. And in conclusion, I'd like to devote the remainder of my 2 minutes to the sound of banging on a pot, which seems to be the only thing that can get the city council's attention, as demonstrated today when the sound of banging pots brought the police out to clear the city hall campus. So here is a pot.
And at this point, Mayor Cummings cut off his mic, not allowing him to exercise his public comment, which was in the form of a pot banging. But since that's what 25 people outside had been doing for 2 hours throughout the council meeting, it seems to me like it is an appropriate and relevant way of conveying what was not being allowed within hearing range of the city council. And I say that very consciously, because the excuse used by Cummings later, and about an hour later from this moment in the broadcast or in the city council meeting, was he claimed that the pot banging was disrupting the council meeting. But if you were watching this on television, you could still hear everything the council members were saying. And I don't know, and I could be wrong, maybe I mistook something to me, I didn't hear it. I didn't hear any council members complaining, perhaps except for the city manager, who wanted everything in order. And so that was the pretext used by the mayor to direct the police to disperse people who were essentially banging pots outside of an empty city council chamber, which to me had a certain futility to it. I reported on it, I believe, either at the last Bathrop Spears Broadsides netcast, which you're listening to now. That's the name of the show, anyway, or the one before. But I would have preferred to see them going to Justin Cummings' house or the city manager's office and doing it there, or I don't know, Cynthia Matthews is the real brainchild behind the council behavior these days, and wherever she's located, so she can actually hear and see, perhaps, outside her residence, the face of the community and how they're really reacting to her proposals and manipulations. That, of course, isn't something that has been chosen to be done yet, but in some cities it has been done. So in Fremont, a lot of people went to the mayor's house a few days ago There's a story about that, which I may be reading later in the show. So, in fact, here's the story in the Mercury News from, July 7th, day before yesterday. A crowd protesting police violence against black and other people of color demonstrated outside Fremont Mayor Lily May's house Monday evening, demanding reductions to the city's police department funding. Protesters drew chalk messages on the street in front of May's home, reading "Defund the FPD, Fremont Police Department, and Asian silence is violence," and carried signs that said "Black Lives Matter and Care, Not Cops." Similar demonstrations seeking police defunding have sprung up in cities across the nation since an officer pressed his knee against the neck of a prone and handcuffed George Floyd in Minneapolis for almost 9 minutes, killing him. Organizers said the demonstration started around 8 p.m. with about 40 people marching up and down the block where May lives, chanting slogans including "No Justice, No Peace, No Racist Police," and saying the names of some people killed by police. The group also played music, danced outside May's home in the Kimber Gomez area of the city before breaking up after midnight. Of course, again, for me, what they needed to do was actually be very specific, and maybe they were. Maybe it just doesn't show up in this Mercury News story about what the particular situation against individuals in Fremont has been, the particular amount of money going to the Fremont Police Department. I suspect they probably had some of these stats, and we just don't get to hear them because, I don't know, Mercury News writers don't think it's that important, or reporters don't pick up on it, whatever. But these particulars are important. And, of course, the idea of staying, not just this being a symbolic, we all go here and then we go home. In other countries, Hong Kong, for instance, and another cities in this country, San Francisco, Seattle, Portland, protesters have stayed and set up encampments outside police stations, demanding that there be changes before they leave. I mean, that's sort of the traditional approach. That's what we did on homeless issues. Of course, they were able to sweep us away. We weren't able to get strong enough community support. But there is that real prospect now in the community because there is such passion around this issue. It's become, dare I say it, fashionable to be concerned about at least black deaths far away from here, and the general call of no justice, no peace, no racist police locally, without necessarily going into the particulars of it here and who's responsible for it, although people are beginning to head in that direction too. And that is something I've been trying to raise for decades in my writing and in these broadcasts that I put out, or more recently in the netcast. The story continues in the Mercury News. It's unclear whether May was home at the time of the protest. The organizers said no one saw her. May did not return calls, texts, or an email Tuesday seeking comment about the action. Justin Valenzuela, 21, of Fremont, who helped organize the protest, said he wants to, quote, amplify the voices of black lives, of indigenous people, to most importantly really make change in the system of Fremont, starting with defunding FPD. Valenzuela said police contacted him to say May wasn't home, but that didn't deter the group. "We want to wake up the affluent suburban neighborhoods in this area," Valenzuela said. Police did not show up during the nonviolent protest. And that's been a similar phenomenon here in Santa Cruz. The protests that went to the beach flats on the Fuck the Fourth rally, as they called it, that marched from the town clock to the police station, to Depot Park, to the beach flats, and then to the boardwalk, and then to the beach flats, and then back, did not have virtually any police at all around or involved in it, which is, it's just, and of course there was no crime and no problem. And I think the danger, I think, that the police see, I'm speculating here, is that the police don't like their authority being challenged and constantly love to assert it in terms of, you know, insisting people follow this irrelevant statute or that irrelevant line or show respect. And of course, if people got "fuck the police" signs, that doesn't show much respect for how the police are behaving. And of course, there are excellent reasons why people are carrying those kinds of slogans. But it tempts the police to, shall we say, be more visibly, use their authority to get these goddamn hippies, commies, Antifa, niggers, you name it, in line. Now, they're not going to use those words, of course. That's, you know, a nasty word. But in fact, what's really going on is not whether people use the proper language, which is why I always believe in calling a spade in some circumstances, even though it may step on some toes. But I believe also that it's not the language you're using, unless you're using it, of course, from a position of power and you're using it to humiliate people, that's something else. But that is not the language itself. That's the use of the language. There's a famous book called The Student is Nigger, which is about how students in the 60s, many of them, were finally getting the treatment that black people have gotten for millennia, or not millennia, but at least centuries here in this country. So the story continues on the Mercury News about the Fremont protest. Another organizer, Jefferson Peng, 21, of Fremont, said he wants money diverted from the police department budget to programs for homeless people, social services, and education resources. Small reforms are not enough. We need systematic change to fight systematic racism, said Peng, who is black. Right now, my family, we're afraid to call 911 because there's a chance that call is going to get me, Peng said. The city's current budget is $96.5 million, some specifics, amounting for about 48%, more specifics, of its general fund, an amount some people criticized during a recent council meeting and a subsequent town hall session, which they seem to have there but not here, as too much. The police have had a chance to make their statement. They've had a chance to change. They've had a chance to grow. And it's not working, Peng said. Last month, May was criticized by some for not kneeling during a Black Lives Matter protest in the city. She explained later she didn't do so because she only kneels for God. I'm not too big into the kneeling thing either because I tend to think it's, again, phony symbolism that doesn't really... And it's also weird symbolism. Scott Graham, who you heard speak earlier in the show at the city council when he called in, pointed out this out to me, and others have pointed it out since, that this whole movement was sparked most recently by the murder of George Floyd, who had cops kneeling on his neck. So why the hell are you going to kneel, given that most recent obscenity? Of course, the answer that I responded to Scott was, well, the original kneeling thing was from Colin Kaepernick in the sports arena where he was showing his determination to end abuse and discrimination against black folks and people of color. So that's why he took a knee, and it became a big issue there, and therefore taking a knee is what a lot of people see as being in solidarity with him. But in a way, it's kind of a nostalgic throwback. I mean, we've gone, that was like 2016 or so, I believe. I could be wrong about the actual year. We're in 2020 now, and we're dealing with not just a symbolic protest at a sports event, but one which indeed got him banned, you know, from his profession, or so far has gotten him banned, but also earned him a lot of acclaim in other ways. So it's a mixed bag for him. But we have now more immediate symbolism, if you're talking about symbolism around that knee, taking a knee thing. Continuing with the story at the Mercury News, one protester who didn't want to give her name said she felt being in front of May's home was necessary because the mayor is not pressured to take on political stances or be a leader, but has a responsibility to do so. These kinds of direct protest actions are rare for Fremont, but it's starting not to be, she said. We want to normalize this. We want to normalize having our voices heard, she said. This isn't just a fad, Ping added, or something that's calming down very quickly. And that is, again, the story from the Mercury News of 2 days ago. Protesters gather in front of Fremont mayor's home demanding police defunding. Protest group chanted, danced in front of mayor's home. And I think there's some pictures, if not some video, on that story if you want to go online and check it out. The story was written by Joseph Kiha of the Bay Area News Group. And let's have a musical break, shall we?
As I walk down the streets of this city, see the desperate looks everywhere, the thin faces across the society, the lost and the long-distance stares. As I call the employment department, and the line is once more occupied in this nation that was born on the 4th of July. As I hear of the nooses and lynchings, as I listen to the president speak, upholding foundations of enslavement and slaughter beneath the destroyed mountain peak, as he talks of restoring America while ignoring all those who have died in this nation that was born on the 4th of July. When I see the masked faces around me, across from the policemen lined up in a row, watching them once more astound me as they fire their weapons wherever we go, shooting reporters and legal observers as the curfew is once more defied in this nation that was born on the 4th of July. As I hear all the voices so loudly, shouting empty the prisons, defund the police, reasoning so very soundly, occupied by this army, how could we ever have peace? As I hear of the dead from LA to New York, a catastrophe no one could deny, in this nation that was born on the 4th of July. As I survey the wreckage around me, all the boarded up windows of the stores that have closed, as I take in the scene that surrounds me, all the inequities starkly exposed that tug at the roots of this country, which began with a war that was based on a lie, when this nation was born on the 4th of July. When this nation was born on the 4th of July.
And that's David Rovick's latest, Born on the 4th of July. His edition, if you go online to the YouTube, which I did, is I'm watching a country built on the foundations of slavery, genocide, real estate speculation, and fantasy crumble before my eyes. May it crumble faster, and may I live to see the dust settle. And now back to the July 2nd shitty city council meeting, from which the public was excluded, except if you... were able to call in, you had some video access, or I guess you could bang a pot outside until the police dispersed you.
I'm going to hope so, because I can't hear you. Thank you so much for the opportunity to comment. My name is Haley Brown. I'm joining other callers today in the call to defund the police and refund community services. As a lifelong resident of Santa Cruz, I'm calling in to express my concern about the proposed budget adoption for the fiscal year 2020 through 2021, in which 28% of the general fund appear to be going towards the Santa Cruz Police Department, seeing a significant increase from the previous fiscal year. From my understanding of Manager Martine Bernal's explanation of this increase during the UCSC NAACP panel on June 20th, this is to account for cost of living increases and not necessarily to account for new or expanded programming and services from SCPD. I would nonetheless like to join with the UCSC NAACP and urging you to revise this budget and consider their thoughtful policy recommendations for a community refund. Now, during a global pandemic, an economic crisis, and a civil rights revolution, this is the time to really be extremely discerning where we direct our limited resources. Cost of living increases are affecting everyone in this community, and the community members most affected by that, our most marginalized populations, are the ones with the greatest need for support at this time, not our police force. We do not approve this proposed budget adoption and instead vote in favor of revisions that redirect these funds to community programming that benefits members of our community most in need of support. Thank you so much for your consideration.
Now, the local NAACP has never been famous for radical or direct action or even strong criticism of the police department. In fact, they were hand in hand with Chief Mills in the Martin Luther King Day March. It was either... I think it was this year or last year, one of these years, and it's something that I was pissed enough about to flyer against because I feel it's an example of people in fancy administrative positions, whether black or white, whether Uncle Tom or Reichsführer Mills, I don't whatever you want to call that particular person in a position of power, they're selling out the people underneath. I don't like it, and I think it needs to be exposed, and the fact that the NAACP is actually coming out for, although I haven't heard any particular or seen much in the way of specific commentary, I probably missed it. They probably spoke up briefly at some big conservatively appropriate massive rally. There have been several massive rallies around Black Lives Matter, which were attended by thousands or hundreds at least, and probably several thousand people, that essentially involved, you know, a nice day out at the park, go and give a speech, hold up a banner, and then go home, which is, it's better than nothing. I mean, you're at least you're out there, you know, starting to exercise your constitutional rights and even taking a risk in this time of COVID-19, which, and I think a risk perhaps for a more important issue than, you know, using a beach to play volleyball on. I mean, that's, to me, this is more important. Of course, I'm not a big volleyball fan, so there you are. Anyway, I don't wish to summarily dismiss or denounce the president of the NAACP. I actually interviewed her when she was at an ACLU meeting, was giving away awards a year or two ago, and she promised that she would follow up on anything that HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I sent her, I represent, would send her, that I am a part of anyway, if not representative of. Certainly, I go to it every week. I make long speeches and try to get people to speak up and act on issues and try to press my own thoughts forward. But she didn't, I'm not aware, maybe the media hasn't been putting it out, and I haven't been putting out a lot of stuff to her, but in my journey finding out what's going on with the police department and homeless people and how they're ticketing them as heavily, massively leaning toward or weighing down homeless folks in terms of harassment citations for very trivial offenses, and I've seen this for decades, but I've seen it most. We actually went through, combed through police citations and found it was also happening to people of color. And particularly an Officer Barnett was doing that. He's no longer, I don't know if he's on the force or not. I think he may still be, looking over the list of police officers that I picked up a few years ago. I don't know if I still see his name on the roster. I'm looking, I don't see it. He may have retired. He was not the youngest guy around. And the relevant thing is, it's not an attempt to badmouth Barnett specifically, although that's what I'm doing. It is an attempt to hold accountable the whole system that he works under, and the its willingness to allow this kind of shit to happen, where, you know, I don't know, four times as many blacks get ticketed as are in the population for this harassment offenses, even as homeless people face similar stats or even worse stats, actually. But, you know, you really got it bad if you're black and homeless. I mean, you know, good luck. Although, you know, if you talk to homeless people, they're struggling to survive. They're struggling to maintain good relationships with police officers, and they have personal relationships with them, and they sometimes get helped by them. You know, it's not all black or white. There's some gray involved, but the general system is pretty black, and that is what is being discussed and what is by the public, what is being demanded for changes in by the public that's trying to get through to city council without success, and being ignored by the Santa Cruz City Council. Let's get back to the public. And the next speaker was apparently cut off completely, presumably because he was banging or she was banging on a pot. This is Cummings mentioning it.
The fact that the rest of your time was going to be used to bang on a pot. But thank you for calling in and thank you for your comments on the sidewalk.
Hi, my name is Kat Miga, and I'm calling because I'm a community member who does not support this proposed budget, specifically the amount of money being allocated to the police. A 2018 SCPD operations analysis showed that 80% of all calls to SCPD were quote-unquote homeless-related. Only 15% of calls were categorized as crime. The amount of money being allocated to police is entirely disproportionate to the community's needs. This is especially egregious during a time when we are in a budget crisis. Like many other community members have said before me, we need to restructure where we put our resources now. I urge you to reallocate these funds to education, healthcare, and the affordable housing our city most desperately needs. We have the ability to treat the ailments of the people most in need and care for our community members who are most at risk. This must be done through a model of public health, not policing. These modes of addressing public health
must be adequately funded in order to work well. Council members, I hope you hear. I hope you are listening to what Santa Cruz is advocating for right now. Please make the necessary changes to this budget to ensure our community is taken care of. Thank you for your time.
And of course, they won't. They didn't, and they're unlikely to without real pressure. In fact, as I said, when I spoke up on this issue slightly, I didn't really get to it as much as I might have. People need to be organizing with each other strongly and appealing to the broader community to take the direct action that will actually result in these changes, not these sort of tender-hearted, on-your-knees or respectful or even annoyed appeals to the Santa Cruz City Council, because you're giving them more power. You're acting as though, you know, they're actually, it makes some sense for people to follow these conventional channels and ask reasonably for change. And if only they wait, maybe they wait till the next election in November. They can elect in a new city council. That'll be the way to go, right? That's what they told us in grade school and high school and college. And that's the way you change things, right? And the answer is no, that's wrong. That's the way you allow them to co-opt you in what's going on. That's the way you allow things to continue as they are. And if there ever seems to be any power in what you're doing, they put a different label on what you're doing. Or actually, they take what you're doing, they change it, and they use the label that you created, Black Lives Matter, in order to proceed with their own their old institutional budget that they were doing before, and with some small modifications. You know, kind of spruce it up, little cosmetic. So it still is good to raise these issues so the community can educate itself as to what's going on. As to the figure that 80% of the budget goes for homeless pseudo-criminal citations, I know that a large percentage of the city budget goes to Parks and Rec and police, significant, more at least a majority of the budget. And I know that the police department has always used the large amount of police time and so-called calls for service, or at least it has repeatedly in the past used it as a basis for demanding harsher laws, more funding, more tools for the police to crack down on homeless folks. Because, they have to spend so much time going after them. But only had more tools and more restrictions, we could do it better. It may make a certain plausible sense if you don't really see what's going on in terms of the fact that decent, ordinary people who are faced by life problems into homelessness and are now being stigmatized as skunks, punks, drunks, junkies, and so forth, although these conditions also tend to come up when you're homeless, as you are if you've ever tried being out in the cold night after night, running from the police, getting treated like a piece of shit by people on the street who look down on you, and stolen from by your fellows because people are, you know, grabbing for survival material. It ain't no easy life. Although, you know, you'll get also some advice from people on how to survive it. And who knows? It's said that homeless folks outside will be teaching the rest of the community how to survive as more and more people lose their housing. And because as the rents become more and more unpayable and evictions eventually start to happen, either in violation of current state edict and court law or state law, or happen anyway because landlords have power and they can do it anyway. They can frighten people out of where they're living in the incessant greed rule scene that people are in the midst of in this society. So, more from the Santa Cruz City Council. I beg your pardon, from the public. The council had nothing to say, really, about this issue. You can hear them if you want to go to the website. I do not want to bother to play them. I guess maybe that may show that I'm not be giving them equal time. But as far as I'm concerned, they've had far too much time, and their time was up long ago.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, good evening.
Hi, my name is Maria Solis Kennedy, and I'm also calling to urge you to cut the police budget and to defund defund the Santa Cruz Police Department and instead to invest in programs that actually benefit our community, like affordable housing and social services. Especially right now when so many of us are still suffering because of COVID-19, the city should prioritize our public health and safety, and fundamentally the police do not keep us safe or make our community safer. A third of our general fund towards policing is a ridiculous public expenditure, especially when 80% of all calls are homeless-related, and because, as we've heard in this meeting, of the strain already happening to the general fund right now. As someone I've already mentioned on social media and various other channels, the police department has been quoted as saying, if someone could take the homeless issues entirely from us and stop us from responding to mental health calls, please take the money. This is exactly what we need to do. The police department is unequipped to deal with issues that houses individuals face. And criminalizing this population, who are disproportionately people of color, is a racist and classist solution that any progressive city should reject. More training is not the answer, and more diverse hiring practices are also not the answer. Frankly, Santa Cruz is behind other progressive cities in joining the conversation about defunding the police and reinvesting in communities of color. This is not impossible or pie in the sky, but is in fact absolutely necessary. Thank you.
And my apologies for the other voices in the background. This was kind of an impromptu recording that was done at the same time as I think I've mentioned before, not on this broadcast, but earlier. Normally, I do these broadcasts on Thursday and prepare them on Thursday and Saturday for play on Sundays and Thursday evening. But in this situation, the city council meeting was on Thursday at the same time, and I'm in the same room as the city council broadcast is happening or coming over the television, and other people were talking at the same time. So I'm going to skip past some of this segment. You can actually, I think could hear the original speaker from talking from the public, talking at the city council. We're probably studiously, examining their bellies or looking to the next agenda item or whatever they were doing. But they certainly didn't indicate from anything they said afterward that they had any interest in what the speakers were saying, other than sort of vaguely acknowledging that there seem to be a lot of people who are concerned about this issue. Now let's go on to the next issue.
I'm Lane Edwards. I'm a resident of Santa Cruz. I've called in several times, so I'm not going to belabor all my points over again, especially since they've been dismissed repeatedly in the calls with police chief Mills. The numbers that we're putting forward were waved aside callously, I would say, ignoring that they're in fact from the Campaign Zero database, which is based on the FBI database. That's the Santa Cruz Police Department perpetrates more misdemeanor arrests than 98% of police departments in the county. If he would like to refute that data, then he should make all of the arrest data from the Santa Cruz Police Department transparently available to the people. And going off of that, I would just go on to say that a lot of things have been pushed aside, saying we should be speaking to the county, that we should be looking for grants, that we should be making these programs happen before we defund the police. The police are an active agent of violence in this community. It would go a long way just to reduce the police presence in this community. If we did nothing else, that would improve the community. And I'm calling on us to reduce the police budget by 50%. Thank you so much.
I'm an older female living in the county for Santa Cruz for over 20 years. And in the city for over 8 years. I want to tell you about a recent experience I had at the beginning of April. I happened to come upon an unhoused young black man surrounded by 9 police officers. The police were called because someone called 911 stating that he was going to jump off a bridge and was suicidal. This occurred in the middle of the afternoon on a weekday. There was not one mental health professional present. In most situations, I've watched 5 to 10 cops surrounding someone who is unarmed with absolutely no mental health professionals, crisis intervention, anything like that. And even with the one social worker who works with the police, who was not there on this occasion, but has been with the police before, I witnessed her only giving out a piece of paper with phone numbers of places to call, most of which are now functional. We need social workers that don't work alongside the police, that have no conflict of interest. Police officers are not social workers, nor should they be. No amount of training will make police equipped to handle the vast majority of calls they get, because what is needed is a robust social safety net with not an armed response. We could afford to vastly expand these services if we stopped spending a third of our general fund on an ineffective police response to social and economic problems. Even though the city of Santa Cruz is only 2% or 1.9% of the population is black, the unhoused population is a much higher percentage at 8%. So we should be looking at that. We should be helping them. During COVID-19, there have been more encampment suites and more RV towing than before COVID-19. This is against CDC guidelines. On numerous occasions, city officials claim they would follow city guidelines, but obviously, this is not what they are doing. Instead of policing homelessness and property crimes, which have been proven not only to be ineffective, but very expensive to address this, we should be investing in services that help those in greatest need, such as affordable housing, mental health, and housing the homeless. Our public safety approach needs to be compassionate and restorative, not punitive and destructive. Give that money to crisis counselors, community meditators, mediators, and other systems of care. Please check out CAHOOTS in Eugene, Oregon. Please, even in Minneapolis, the city where George Floyd was murdered. They've already tried police reforms like body cameras, sensitivity training, and they've proven ineffective. We need to follow suit and exemplify how progressive we say we are here in Santa Cruz. Thanks.
Sit down for a minute, I'll tell you a story about lots of different people, including yours truly. When the pandemic hit, I had to cancel all my shows in the fight against the virus. I guess that's how it goes. They said to call this number if you need help with food and rent. It's the PUA division of the Department of Employment. So I get up every morning since the beginning of the spring. But if the department is open, the phone never rings. It's always beep, beep, beep. The line is busy. Beep. You'll have to wait. Beep, 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 the only answer, the tone of a failed state. There just aren't enough programmers who are still alive who learned how to program back in 1985 when the last update was made to this broken mess, like a testament to the definition of stress. It's always beep, 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 the line is busy. Beep, 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 you'll have to wait. Only answer, the tone of a failed state. My application was rejected with notes that made no sense. It's been 3 months since I applied, since I've been staring at this fence. Survival sourced completely from the crowd, hearing stories of hunger as I listen to the sound of beep, 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 the line is busy. Beep, 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 you'll have to wait. Beep, 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 the only answer, the tone of a failed state. The department head got fired as the tragedies mount, but we're still waiting for relief, still zero at last count. If you think the keg is burning, that there's tumult on the shore, if those checks don't come in soon, who knows what's in store? It's always beep, 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 the line is busy. Beep, 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 you'll have to wait. Beep, 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 the only answer, the tone of a failed state.
And that was David Rovics again. The Ballad of the Oregon Employment Department. So next up here, I have an interview with Sonia up in the from the Fremont Psych Ward up north, where she was transferred against her will and is currently being held against her will and medicated against her will. And she speaks for herself. This is a recording I did earlier today with her permission. And, well, here it is. I think it's important, I guess, because this situation of the power given to psychiatric authorities and institutional psychiatry is still a pretty fearsome thing. You hear a lot of people saying, gee, we need more psychiatric facilities, take people off the streets, and they all need all this help that they're going to get there. But, of course, the issue is also, as a matter of one, of voluntary consent. And that is one which we fought back in the 60s, finally got an act in California called the Lenormand-Petras Short Act, which I never quite get the proper wording for it. But it gave some protection to, it's promised some protection to people being held against their will as psychiatric cases, claiming that there has to be a strong finding either of gravely disabled, danger to yourself, or danger to others. And that whole thing has been weakened over the years with what's called Laura's Law, the assisted outpatient treatment law, as that's a nice way of putting it, that they have, which allows weakening of those criteria. That, in other words, it used to be that you have to say, look, I'm not a danger to myself, I'm not a danger to others, I'm not gravely disabled, let me go. And also there was a finding in a Reese decision, which was the a woman named Reese successfully did not want to be medicated the way they were medicating her. She eventually, I think, died of the medications or complications that eventually came from the medications. And she sued St. Mary's Hospital up in San Francisco. There's a movie out about it called 55, which I recommend people check out. It's, I believe it's online on, I don't know if it's on YouTube, but it's on Prime Video if you get that, which you may not. But find if you find it, check it out. 55, which has to do with the 55 steps you take to get into the court, 55 actual steps up to the physical steps going into a court building. And she climbed in her appeals and so forth. In any case, I am still trying to get the goods on what protections people have in the county here of Santa Cruz. I've talked to George Carvalho at least once, I think twice. He's kind of hard to reach. I can't get the documents at this time, which supposedly are supposed to mandate a patient access to a Reese hearing, which has to say if they want to shoot you up with a medication, you have a right to go into a hearing and say, look, I believe I can control myself on the ward during the 72-hour hold period or the 14-day hold period. The first is called a 5150, the second a 5250, based upon the code section, which they do it under. And so I don't need any medication, or at least that medication is not good for me. And you have to show that I'm, you know, incompetent, or at least there has to be a standard that shows that I so much don't know what I'm doing that I can't reject the medication you're providing during the period of time you're holding me. And I know a lot of people feel that medication is the silver bullet for getting rid of psychiatric problems that people have. I don't think that's true, and I think it's been shown that in countries where people are medicated less, they generally recover quicker. It isn't, you know, there's not, you know, a totally generic golden rule here, but there has been, we've had some discussions with Robert Whitaker. He's an author, previously with the Boston Globe. We did a lot of research and writing on it. He wrote a book called Mad in America and has a website now that covers that situation, which went into in some detail the allegations of psychiatric, institutional psychiatry, I guess is the way to put it, about the great benefits of the medication, and not so much. And it's nice for doctors to claim they have the pills that will cure you, but that doesn't seem to be the case. Now, we've talked about it on this show some time ago, and we'll probably have to do it again. I'll have to reread those books and discuss in detail the actual counterclaims of those who are suspicious and, I think, properly skeptical of psychiatric medications. But at least you should have the right to refuse them. And that has to do with the Reese decision that allows you supposedly to get access to at least an in-hospital hearing before a somewhat more impartial judge. I'm not sure how impartial. I think that they can be someone who's appointed by the hospital, even. I'm not sure. But there's been some confusion recently when I was told by George Carvalho, who's the psychiatric advocate in this county, and I'm actually due to have an interview with him on one of these shows, and hopefully I'll do that I don't know, maybe I'll do that before Sunday's show. I could try to get that one together. Maybe I will and maybe I won't. But he claims that the doctors have to agree to let you have a hearing, which is, of course, a conflict of interest because usually it's the doctors who want to, they believe, you know, shoot you up for your own good or require you to take medication for your own good. They have the right to come to that conclusion, but it's your body, and you ultimately have the right to say yes, no, or maybe, or sometimes, or after I read some more about the bad effects or the good effects or the risks of the medication. And so I don't know what the current status is, actually, because I've gotten this contrary information from George Carvalho that apparently you may not be entitled to a rehearing unless you get your permission from the doctor. Kind of reminds me like you're not allowed to speak at city council on a particular consent agenda item individually unless you get the permission from a council member. That was a change made by Supervisor Ryan Coonerty when he was a city council member and a mayor at the Santa Cruz City Council as a way of essentially dealing with activists and critics who didn't like the way things were rushed through the consent agenda generally. And now you have to get permission from a council member. And I think they've imported that whole bad process. It's infected the Board of Supervisors now, where the supervisors, you have to get permission from a supervisor to talk on an agenda item. That was a recent change, I think, earlier this year. Anyway, getting back to this conversation I had with Sonia Mason, who's an activist who sells street spirit and works with HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, or at least attends our meetings. Here's the conversation I had with her from Fremont this morning. All right, today is July 9th, 2020. I'm on the line with Sonia Mason, who is being held against her will on, I guess it's a 5250 or maybe it's a 5350, I got no idea, 14-day hold, maybe a second 14-day hold. And what's the name of this joint you're at there, Sonia?
This is not John George. This is Fremont Hospital.
Fremont Hospital. And how long have you been held there?
Right now, how long have I been held here at Fremont Hospital? How long have I been here at Fremont Hospital? Does anybody know? Aaron, do you know when I got here at Fremont?
That's a question, because I see you're a missus.
It's way too long for however long they think I should be here.
I understand.
Too long.
Does anybody have the
29th of June.
June 29th. Okay, So that's you're going close to 14 days, not quite yet, but
14 days.
And when were you told you'd be released? You originally
they told me I would be released after 3 or 4 days. I remember Pardeep. She works at the front desk. She's one of the floor staff here, and she said that I would be released tomorrow, which was the next day when I was here.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the 30th.
Mm-hmm.
It is now July 9th, and I'm still here. I see people walking on the windows, jumping on things and tables and stuff like that. And I was laughing hysterically about it because I figured that's not me. That's somebody else. But at the same time, it's part of the situation that I'm in because it's like people are not really looking at why I'm here. They're looking at other people, and then I think they're mixing me in with these other people.
Well, I know you were in a ward in Santa Cruz, right, for a while?
Yeah, it was what was it called? OutCare. Robert, you have to give me a link to this recording. I am a big fan of getting on these recordings.
Well, this will be played. Yeah, I will, and this will be played.
Robert has a tendency, he doesn't give me any of these recordings, but please, if anyone is listening, I want all recordings of these detailed messages because I love recording.
Well,
I do that.
Up until recently, the recordings haven't been available online, but as of last night we fixed the recording. So
that's fantastic.
They're actually available. I don't have to give you anything. You can just go online and find them. They're right there.
Well, you have to help me with that, Robert.
and I'd be happy to do that. But let me just get back to so we can tell people what happened again. And let's,
sure.
You know, you got to kind of pretend that, you know, you haven't gone through this story before, but let's make it very brief. You, after you had an accident on your bike, and tell me if I'm wrong about any of this, you had a difference of opinion with a techie or an emergency
police officer who came with the ambulance. Yeah, and she came. I think she was an officer, and it was a Jewish guy there too. It was a Jewish officer there, and then he put me in handcuffs because I called her a bitch, and then they proceeded to take me to the OutCare at Santa Cruz. I think it was Telecare.
You're an African American woman yourself.
I'm Haitian, Latin American.
Thank you, and but your skin color indicates that you're darker than us honkies.
It would indicate I'm a little bit brown in December. Yeah.
Okie doke. And so you were then held for three days. And you called me soon after, as I remember, and you were told you were being forcibly medicated.
I am being forcibly medicated. They're making me take Nardol. If I don't take it, they already strapped me up and made me take it with a needle. So,
and they claim they're holding you because they say you are a danger to others. That's their claim, right?
They never told me why. They're still saying that I have to be on good behavior. I'm always on good behavior. Like, the only time I pout is when I'm like being ignored, or if I'm asking to talk to the staff, which is Nassim, and then he kind of blows me off, like a lot of the staff here, and they kind of they throw me under the bus, or they push it aside by making it seem like they're not involved, or they're not the cause of being involved. But we all know they are the cause of being involved.
Now, are
the say so of who leads
Sonia,
and stays.
Sonia, have you requested that you be given a hearing, what I call a Reese hearing, before being forced to take medication again?
Now, I asked about this Reese hearing, and they brushed me off about this. I've asked them about this, and they said, well, you know, you just have to be on good behavior and stuff. They make it seem like they don't have any rules or any kind of, they make it seem like they don't have any habeas corpus or none of that. It's just their rules against everybody else.
Let me ask you again. You asked both the authorities in Santa Cruz and the authorities in Fremont.
No, I didn't know about it then. I just knew about it when I was here, when after you told me.
Right. So you knew, so at least you asked in Fremont, and yet you've been held and daily, and sometimes twice daily, medicated with Nardol against your will. Is that correct?
Yeah, pretty much.
And have you, what have been the impact of Nardol? What kind of a negative and or positive impact does it have on you?
Nardol is the type of situation where it's saying that I'm not sane enough to live without medication that I needed to actually behave. I'm a very behaved young lady. I've always been well behaved.
What's the effect of Nardol?
If you want to look at the police department, and if you want to see who really needs Nardol,
Sonia,
for the guy who just got recently killed by the police officer over there.
I'm going to interrupt you, Sonia, because I want to ask
who needs Nardol.
I'm interrupting you because Sonia, I'm going to interrupt you because what I want to know is, what's the effect of the Nardol on you, positive and negative? What effect does it have?
Oh, it drowses me out. It makes me drowsy. It makes me sleepy. Like right now, I feel kind of tired. I feel sleepy, and it doesn't make me feel good.
Yeah. Does it interfere with your ability, let's say, to think things out, to write things down, to have communications with other people? You sound a little sleepy, but you know, you're still pretty articulate.
I am. I'm going to stay articulate for the rest of my life, being that I miss Sonia Mason, you know, and that's automatic.
Have you requested? You've been able to make phone calls because you've been able to call me.
Yeah.
Have you had any success in getting a hold of a psychiatric advocate up in whatever county you're in Fremont?
Hey, let me tell you, I left the number for this number here, which is Patients' Rights Advocate. It's 1-800-734-2504,
uh-huh.
Extension being 4230. And the other lady's name is Annie, who's a patient advocate. She's never gotten in touch with me whatsoever. Her number as well is 796-1100. She's never got in touch with me regarding anything about me being here or why I'm here. No one, in other words, no one has gotten in touch with me.
Now, my experience with you, Sonia, has been, you know, we've contacted each other by phone, because you've come to Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meetings.
Yeah,
and you've been,
I try to let them know that I do go to these type of meetings, and
you're a regular
have
vendor.
A life.
you're a regular vendor of Street Spirit newspaper.
And Street Sheet as well.
And Street Sheet in San Francisco, too.
And Good Times as well. Believe it or not, they let me hold on to Good Times, so I pass up the Good Times.
Right, and this, of course, is a paper that is distributed by folks outside or who are poor just in order to make a little something so they can, you know, get
it. Yeah, I pass them out freely. I don't even ask for money, but the people who know me, believe it or not, people who know me from Santa Cruz to Berkeley, people who are actually live in Santa Cruz, but they travel to Berkeley, they say they remember me passing out the Street Spirits. And believe it or not, they still give me money. So I'm very thankful for that they recognize me as a vendor and that they recognize me, and I'm thankful for that.
Are they classifying you at either of these hospitals you've been at as homeless?
Nasheen said that we see that you're not homeless, and I don't understand what he means by that, but I kind of take offense to that. I mean, it's like saying that you have a home, so you must be somebody if you have a home, and I really don't appreciate that, being that when I was homeless, I was an activist, and I did the best that I could do as an activist and as a homeless person. I don't like the way he tried to trick me.
The reason I mention it, Sonia, is that one of the conditions under which they can hold you and continue to hold you is if they claim you are gravely disabled. And one of the reasons that they can claim you're gravely disabled or has been done, I guess, although they shouldn't be doing this, is if they say, oh, she's homeless, she has no place to go.
Yeah, that's no reason to keep somebody.
No, it isn't. But it isn't.
Caretakers are for it. It's not mental.
No, it's a good excuse to keep people, and that's the point.
My parents take care of people. My parents would take care of me then.
Uh-huh. The reason I mention it is because frankly, I don't know these people that are holding you, but if they're like other psychiatric wards,
you should. If they're like other psychiatric wards,
they're holding you on the basis of these little categories. One of them is danger to yourself. One of them is danger to others.
Let me finish
because we're doing a broadcast here.
I know.
Let me finish this. These three categories, if they have to show that you're in one of these three categories, if they can't, you are entitled to go free, supposedly, if you can ever get to a court. But you said you've asked for a Reese hearing, and they say they don't know anything about that. They brush it away up in Fremont.
Exactly.
Have you also asked for a writ of habeas corpus, the right to go before a judge and say?
Of course.
And what have they said to that?
He brushed it off. I mean, it's, you know, like the movies, how they do in the movies. It's a serious, it's just like the movies. They'll brush you off or to make it seem like you didn't say anything at all.
Gotcha.
As if I don't exist. That's where I'm at now. And I did mention habeas corpus. I did.
So my suggestion...
How many times I have to mention...
Well, mentioning it verbally probably is not going to be enough. You have to probably start writing it down and handing it to them.
Well, maybe that's where we come in. I mean, as activists, you know, maybe who's ever been in a situation like this, maybe they can help me or write a letter on my behalf stating of why I'm still here, because I have no, I can't do that. I have no stamps. I have no letters.
Okay, now
I
understand.
Stamp.
I understand. Well, my suggestion to you on that is, and it's a good suggestion that you're making too, but is to hand them a piece of paper that says, I request to be taken for a judge. I believe I am not danger to myself, danger to others, or gravely disabled. I request a hearing before I get further medication. Those three sentences, and I can repeat them again. If you hand it to them, they'll ignore it probably if they're continuing to do what you're doing. But then after you've done that, give a call to someone like your father or to me and say, I handed them a paper today that said this, and then do it again the next day. And then do it again the next day.
Could you state that one more time?
Sure. I would say, in fact, if you want, I can wait till you get a pencil and paper.
I have it now.
Okay, you want, I am not gravely disabled. A danger to myself.
Me, Sonia Mason.
Yes.
Me, Sonia Mason.
Right.
Or others.
Or others, I request to be released or taken before a judge.
I request to be released
immediately, or taken before a judge.
Or taken. That's well said. Or taken.
Taken to a judge.
A judge.
I request a hearing.
I request a hearing
before being given further medication against my will.
I request a hearing before
being given.
Before being given.
More medication. Against my will.
More meds against my will.
And just, you know, keep a copy of that for yourself if you can, because what you'll have to do is you'll have to keep repeating it every day. But
yeah.
But if they see it coming to, and then you call me or you call your father and you say, I've sent them another letter.
What's the date? The date is the 9th?
Correct. Today is the 9th. And then you can add each day, this is my second letter, this is my third letter, this is my fourth letter. And, you know, after a while, they're going to get nervous.
Now, what should I say about habeas corpus?
You're saying that. When you ask to be taken for a judge.
Oh, got it, yeah.
I mean, the word is, if you want the words, a writ, W-R-I-T, writ.
A writ.
Of habeas corpus, and that's H as in Harry, A, B as in boy, E as in Eric, A, S, habeas and corpus. C-O-R-P-U-S, corpus, like Latin for body.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
So I'd say do that. I'll give your dad a call and tell him that, you know, you'd love to talk to him. And let me see. And I think we have your number here, which is 510-574-4839, in case anyone who's listening wants to call and talk to you. And that's it for this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadside. I'm going to have to cut this one short. We have a kind of a crisis that's come up, and I need to address that. But if you need any information repeated that's on the show, if you can go to the latest and lost shows and listen to this show again, in case you're listening to it for the first time, perhaps over the net. But you can go to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, go to latest lost shows, and look for the top show for July 9th, and you'll be able to hear this again, and you'll be able to pick up on phone numbers in case you want to get in touch with Sonia, also known as Angel, or with me, and I'm at 423-4833. In the meantime, it's all up to you, folks. As always, that's always really the way it is. Be back hopefully on Sunday at 9:30, and you'll be able to hopefully check out archives now, because I think we've largely repaired them, and you can go to the Huff website and hear old shows and hear the latest show. Thanks for listening.